Welcome to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM, and KTAL LP at 101.5 FM in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Earth Matters seeks to provide an in-depth examination of local, regional, and national conservation issues relevant to you, our listeners. This program is a collaboration between Gila Resources Information Project, New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and the Southwest Environmental Center. For podcasts of the show and all others, please visit the Earth Matters page on the Gila Members Community Radio website, gmcr.org. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection, restoration, and continued enjoyment of New Mexico's wild lands and wilderness areas, especially our beloved Gila Wilderness and Gila River. On today's show, we're talking with Chris Moeller, who is a program mentor with Open Sky Wilderness Therapy based in Durango, Colorado. Welcome to Earth Matters, Chris, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Nathan. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah, so you have been living here in Silver City for about 4 or 5 years, is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
And you're currently an intern at GRIP as part of your schooling to get your master's in social work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you predominantly work for this organization called Open Sky Wilderness Therapy. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what this organization is and what you guys do?
You bet. So Open Sky is a wilderness therapy program, and we work with adolescents and young adults. And essentially what happens is family decides that their children aren't doing well anymore, they're having trouble with school, family issues, behavioral issues, pretty much any mental health issue you could think of we deal with out there, except for some extreme issues such as psychoses and people who are very aggressive or violent. And basically, my role for the past 14 years has been to work with people in the field as a field guide and basically help teach them the day-to-day living skills that they need to learn how to survive in the wilderness, and then a lot of group living skills and therapeutic skills, which basically help them learn to cope, develop their awareness about what's going on in their life and how to have more power in what they're doing. And we do all this out in the wilderness, which gives them a way to step out of their life. So they are away from their family, they're away from all of their normal triggers, they have all their normal distractions are gone. So they have to face everything out there without what they normally have.
No cell phone.
Yep, no cell phone, no friends, no nothing. So when they show up, everything is literally taken away from them.
And what's the age ranges of the kids that you typically work with? Are we talking about adolescents really here?
Well, we have two different programs. One's adolescents that generally range between 15 to 17. And then we have a young adult program, which is usually college age. So
okay.
18 to 22.
Okay. So how did you find this path to start working on wilderness therapy? I'm always curious to hear how people sort of find their niche. You said you've been doing this for 14 years. That's quite a long time these days. You don't see a lot of people who sort of stick to one job and kind of run with it for the rest of their career, basically. So how did you sort of get into this line of work?
Well, first of all, you're right that people don't really last very long. The average length of a guide is about a year and a half. So 14 years is pretty considered crazy in my field of work. And a lot of people I work with think I am crazy, which kind of goes into how I found this. It's just I ended up dropping out of grad school for marine biology because I got tired of the politics. And in that time, I was guiding rivers and fell in love with just being outside. And initially, it was just about having fun. And I went from doing day trips to eventually doing 15 day trips up in Idaho, Montana, and Alaska.
Where in Idaho?
Based out of Salmon.
Okay.
But I guided on a bunch of different rivers, Owyhee, Jarbidge Bruno, and the Middle and Main Salmon. But we went all over. It was one company. It was really sweet. And I just started realizing I felt better and better when I was out in the wilderness and wanted to be there more. And I started learning a lot of primitive living skills and realized it was a lot more fun to do that and live outside than it was to just travel in the winters, because I pretty much only worked 5 months out of the year as a guide. And then I came across this thing called wilderness therapy a friend told me about, and was like, I should give that a try for a winter because I can live outside, I can do primitive skills, and keep doing what I love doing and learn more about it.
It almost sounds like when you say wilderness therapy, like it's therapy for yourself, but... You know, I mean, going to the wilderness is kind of like a therapeutic reason for me to go out there, and possibly for you as well. But, you know, our conversation, we're talking about therapy for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you kind of transition from loving wilderness and getting so connected to it that you wanted to spend as much time out there learning all these great skills that you learned to then transitioning into helping other people connect through wilderness.
Yeah. Well, what happened to me is when I did that my first winter is I realized that instead of just being out having fun for a week or 2 weeks, what I came to realize is I no longer had to have the same conversations every time when people showed up for a new trip. The level of connection I got with people was a lot deeper. And the more I felt that connection with people, I realized that that actually intensified the experience I was having in the wilderness, because I had the reflection not only of the wilderness mirroring back to me what I was going through, but I had that reflection from other people just saying, literally, hey, you realize how different you are right now when we're doing this in the wilderness versus when you're out in the world.
Yeah.
So it helped me learn how to connect with myself and others more powerfully. And when I realized that that was just happening naturally, then I decided I wanted to put more intention into how can I actually help people experience this more quickly instead of just being out and letting it happen naturally. When we do things with intention, there's a lot more power. And this day and age, things happen so quickly.
Right.
And people don't have the resources often to be able to be out for as long. So the more I can do to speed the process up and help people ground and come in, I started to see much, much greater results more quickly.
So what's the typical, if you can say typical, sort of scenario of a student or an adolescent comes to this program, to Open Sky Wilderness Therapy? Do you like go in and snatch them up? Do they get like, how does it sort of typically happen?
Yeah. So generally what happens, the family gets to a point where they have run out of what they think are other options. We're kind of a last resort because we're very expensive and it's extreme for families to send their kids out to the wilderness for an average of 10 to 12 weeks.
10 to 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So most of the families are afraid that their children might run away or just won't go. So they end up hiring what are called escorts. They come to their house usually between 2 and 4 in the morning, and that's just because of logistics, sometimes because that's when the kids are there. But it's mostly about flights.
Mm.
That's when they can get them to the airport, get them on a flight, and fly them out to Colorado where they drop us.
And they have like no notice of this happening, right?
They have generally no idea. I'd say over 95% have no idea until somebody shows up in the room and says, you're going with us. So it's pretty traumatic. And then they get dropped off in Colorado. And we do some stuff in town with them, and then we take them to our office, and we take away all their stuff, all their clothes, all their cell phones, everything. We give them all the gear they need to survive for the 12 weeks. And then we drive them out in the wintertime to the deserts in Utah, and in the summertime to the mountains in Colorado. And they get dropped off to a group of peers. So we have single-sex groups, so girls and guys and the adolescents. And they're dropped off there, and for about the first 24 to 48 hours, they can only talk to the guides and their one student mentor. So their whole life is taken away.
Wow.
And they're left, and they have this whole new team, and they're looking around, and generally people are staring at them excited because somebody new is there. And they're watching, like, what is going on? And these people are saying weird things, and it doesn't make any sense because, like every group and culture, we have our own language we use out there. Some things like bust means a lot of things. Which maybe we'll get into, but it's fun to watch that transition. And there's also a big process of grief, because as I said, their whole life is taken away from them.
Yeah.
So at this point, they're generally angry, and they're blaming their parents. And it takes usually a couple of weeks before they actually start to accept they're there and sink into
a couple of weeks before they actually kind of accept it.
Yep.
Wow. I'm just trying to like a picture that what that must be like for you. And so how do you sort of deal with that as a program mentor or a field guy when you're out there? Mm-hmm. How do you bring that person down to a level to where they can, you know, start to just deal with basic day-to-day life? Because that's mm-hmm. what they have to do at this point. Like you said, you take away everything that they've ever had or mm-hmm. that they know. And now they're out in a wilderness experience where probably, I would guess, many of them have never experienced that before in the mm-hmm. first place. So they got to put up a tent. They got to, you know, help cook food, build mm-hmm. fire or whatever. Like, is that one of the ways that you sort of get them to accept what's going on and to maybe have some buy-in into it, just mm-hmm. because they have to have basic survival skills?
Well, the initial phase, we work on the medicine wheel. So when they first get there, they're in the South, and that's all about the physical. It's really an awesome way to build rapport with people because they need help learning how to survive. So their student mentor, the other students, and the guides start teaching them things. And it's not as luxurious as you might think in terms of having a tent. We don't have tents. When they first come, they actually learn how to take a tarp and some string and make a backpack out of that. And you get to camp, and then you unroll your your backpack that you've made, and that tarp becomes your shelter. So we have minimal gear, and that brings some of the power in, because again, we don't need all this fancy stuff.
Right.
We don't need all the distractions. We just need basics of what we need to survive. And we still get to survive very comfortably, even with minimal gear. And it's really amazing because the majority of people that we work with are the 1%. So they normally come in and they're entitled. They've had everything and they've traveled the world. And like whatever they want, they get. And this is the first time generally their parents have said, we're giving you something you don't want. And they try to work their way around that and try to get things, but there really is nothing out there to get. So we work on just that basic physical level with them and help them learn how to survive and how to be comfortable. And one of the cool things we do is we teach them how to make friction fires. So with that, we do a bow drill fire. Sometimes they'll get to a hand drill, but that depends how excited they are about it.
Takes a lot of commitment.
Yeah. But it's really fun and amazing. Every person I've ever seen get their first fire is a really special experience and something they will never forget and is a really empowering thing. And a lot of what we focus on in the South is, you know, the therapeutic realm is called task completion, which if you take a student who hasn't left home sometimes for 10 months, they stay in bed, they skip school, they won't go out because they're so depressed. And they come out into the wilderness, and when we wake them up in the morning from the shelter, we give them generally 10 minutes to get out of the shelter, take all their shelter and stuff down, bring it to camp center, which is, you know, 100 feet away, and then lay it all out nice and organized. And 10 minutes for that. And when I see a kid get up and do that day after day who hasn't been out of bed in a month, has been skipping school, it's a miracle.
Yeah.
And parents don't even realize how that little thing is such a huge thing. It's like, well, good, they're getting up. They should do that every day. It's like, well, were they? No. Like, here they are, and they're doing stuff. And they find through doing these little things, which seem little on the outside, they keep snowballing.
It's building blocks.
Yep. All these little physical things they're doing, they start to feel better about themselves. And they don't have to worry about all the things at home, like the grades and school and their family picking, like telling them to do stuff. It's like they can focus on what's important in that moment. And being present with that gives them a lot more power to deal with how to live their lives as opposed to feeling like failures and preventing themselves from living.
We are talking with Chris Muller of Open Sky Wilderness Therapy. You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. We'll be right back after a short break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM and KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. I'm your host for today's show. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and we're talking with Chris Muller of Open Sky Wilderness Therapy. And Chris, in the first segment there, we started just to kind of touch a little bit about the work that you do with adolescents and younger folks who are having some difficulties in life. And you mentioned something called the medicine wheel and how you start off in the South, you said, with the physical. What are the other elements of the medicine wheel in terms of therapy for young, these young adults?
So Open Sky is a pretty holistic program. We work on four levels: body, heart, mind, and soul. And those go around the medicine wheel. So body is the South, the physical, the passion. The West is the heart, the emotional. That's where a lot of the therapy works, where we get into the shadow work. The North is more of having accepted they've been there and also accepting what their work is. They've learned about themselves. They've grown, and they've decided that they want to be a leader for themselves and for their team because they know what they're working on and how they want to grow, and they start to do it, and it comes more from within them of wanting to do that and grow. And the East is that coming full circle, seeing the big picture, the perspective, and knowing when to step in and lead in physical and emotional ways and when to leave space for people to be able to grow and do their own work and having that balance. And it's not many students make it all the way to the East, and it's really special when they do, because when anybody gets there, everybody knows it's a big deal. All the other students, the peers, are like, wow, you're doing amazing. Like, this is really inspiring to see.
Exactly. It must be empowering for those other individuals who think, well, if this person can do it, why can't I do it?
Yep. And that's interesting because we actually do sometimes when students see that, they get inspired. And for a while, the culture is everybody wants to get to the East. And, you know, those types of cultural pieces go back and forth. Sometimes they'll be like, ah, nobody wants to get there. Why'd we ever want to, like, really invest that much and do the hard work? And then other times it's everybody wants to.
So in this sort of process of coming into the medicine wheel and coming into the therapy, I would imagine that you've got people there who have been there for several weeks, and then somebody new will join, and so on and so forth. So you'll get somebody who might be coming full circle to the East, but then you've got people who are sort of scattered all along. Is that by design, or is that just sort of the way it is?
It is by design. We're what's called an open enrollment program, so people can come any day of the year. And that's in part because...
24-7.
24-7.
Wow.
Yep. That's in part because when a family hits crisis, they often feel that they need to have their child in a program right now.
Immediately.
And sometimes that's literally the student's been a runaway, and they finally just found them, and they want them in the program that night. And sometimes, you know, it's timing. Beginning of summer, parents are more likely to have their children sent out to the wilderness because they're not going to miss school.
Right.
So we always have a big increase in numbers at that time of the year. One of the benefits therapeutically is that, as you mentioned, with people in all different stages of the program. And I've literally had students show up when we're having the graduation ceremony for a student who's going to be leaving the program, and they're there with their family, and they're talking about how amazing it is, and they're like, they look at the student who they can't even talk to really, who just showed up that night, and they're like, you're not going to believe this, but you're probably not going to want to leave when it's your time to sit where I'm sitting. Like, this has been an amazing experience, make the most of it. And people often tell newer students that, and newer students are always like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand it. It's a totally different perspective, and it's really fun to watch because I would say, just anecdotally from my experience, probably 98% of the people that I've worked with get to the place where they don't want to leave. Because when they end up being there for long enough, they realize it's very safe. It's safe physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And they've made these connections that they've always wanted, but they've been afraid to make. And they've looked at all these things that in their past they felt ashamed of. And here they can deal with it out in the open, and there is no more shame about it because they can talk to everybody and share everything about it. And they realize that's what they've wanted, and all these things they've been doing in their life. Previous to this, the drugs, alcohol, and all kinds of everything you can imagine, there'd be a negative coping mechanism they've done to try to avoid feeling these feelings. And here they can just say, hey, this is what I did, this is who I am. And people accept them.
And they own it.
Yeah, and they get to connect with people authentically. And there's so much power. And 99% of what we really do out there is to teach people how to connect with themselves and with others. And the wilderness creates that mirror that allows them to see, oh, yeah, I can be this person. And if it's going to rain, it rains. If I get angry, it's still going to rain. I'm still going to get wet. If I take care of myself, if I do things differently, I'm not going to get wet. I'll be more comfortable. But it's my choice, and it's really hard, and people do try to resist and fight the wilderness, but you can't.
No.
You can't win. You can get in better shape so you can climb a mountain more easily. The mountain's still going to be there. And, you know, people, even when they do, let's say, get in shape, they'll all of a sudden be like, they'll want a greater challenge because they realize they've overcome one thing, and now they're ready. Everything they overcome, they've gotten stronger. And it's really clear. It's out there because it's not so much of like, oh, you got an A in your class, that means you're ready for the next class. No, it's like you feel a difference.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel better. I feel happier. I feel more empowered. And when it comes down to it, a core of what we work on is self-awareness. Because if they don't know what they're doing, they don't have any power to make a change. So once we can help them see what they're doing and understand what their values are and how they've been doing everything they can in their lives to get their needs met. And oftentimes we do those in unhealthy ways. We break our values. So when they understand what their values are and they understand what needs they're trying to meet and they put those together, all of a sudden they can make a choice instead of feeling good and getting their need met in the moment but feeling bad later. They can make a choice where they're going to honor their values. They're going to get their need met. And a year later, they're going to feel better and happier because they actually made that choice.
Now, you said just now something about 98% of the people that you've worked with, you felt like they sort of didn't want to leave this program. What's this overall success rate of the people that come to Open Sky Wilderness Therapy?
So we do research with them pre and post wilderness therapy, and the results are phenomenal. There's greater extent of growth in wilderness therapy than in residential programs, where people go and live for 12 months in a school. we do research up to 2 years after and still see like majority of positive results. I don't hear back very much from students when they graduate, when they're there. We're in a very intense level of care, actually about the most therapeutically intense environment you could ever imagine, because they've got people with them 24/7. Go to a residential school or even an inpatient medical facility, and they don't have people with them that much. They'll sometimes, if they're acting out, they'll literally get what the students often refer to as booty juice.
Booty juice?
Booty juice, which they get a shot that calms them down and puts them asleep. We don't do that in the wilderness. If somebody's upset, we sit there with them and we help them through that situation. So it's a very different way. We're there to be in connect with them. And a lot of the healing comes from being in connection with people. So that success rate comes from the relationship, which they say over 80% in the research, the results last 2 years. And after that point, they've stopped tracking it.
Right.
Because there's so much else that happens in life after that point. You know, like who could really tell what is still maintaining that? But real change, research shows, takes about 16 to 18 months to implement a new change in someone's life. So we're considered a primary intervention, which, as I mentioned earlier, people come to us when they're in their most intense state of distress.
Dire straits.
Yep. And more so for adolescent girls than for boys. Families still seem to stereotype girls. They shouldn't send them to the wilderness. So they actually wait longer, so they're in greater distress when they come to us. My specialty is actually working with adolescent girls. And I think that's one of the reasons I like that, because they come in such a more intense state that the amount of growth that happens there is also more intense and greater. So the difference between the growth in boys and girls is actually like a twofold difference.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Just because they come in all the intake questionnaires, they come in a much higher state of distress, but they also leave in a higher state of functioning than the boys leave in. So they come from lower and get higher. So it's like they go from an F to an A, and the boys go from like a C to a B.
Huh.
And it's really amazing to watch. And it does take a lot more to hold, because there's a lot of times when I'm like their favorite person in the world and they love me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like their father they've always wanted. And then the very next second, I'm the worst person in the world and they hate me. And they'll flip back and forth. So there's a lot of holding that and learning to hold.
How do you deal with that emotionally? I mean, that's a lot of roller coaster riding, if you will, to deal with.
Well, it totally is. And that's one of the hardest things for new guides to learn to do, is to not take things personally and to not take the successes or the pitfalls personally, because either one will destroy a guide.
Mm.
So really learning how to create that barrier. And, you know, early on, I learned that it wasn't about me. I'm there to help them, but they do all the work. I just help to hold the space. And a lot of that is the wilderness, where I just help them learn to be safe in the wilderness. And they eventually just step into doing it. And I'm there to help, but it's not about giving advice. It's not about telling them what's right.
Letting them find their way.
They know what's right. They already know what they want. They've just been afraid to do it. They've been afraid to accept it, admit it, and face the things that are getting in their way. So when I get out of the way and let the wilderness in, they start to realize, oh, I can do this. And then they start to make the change. And they'll still say, Open Sky changed my life, or even sometimes like you changed my life. And that's a wonderful thing to feel for myself. Like, I know I'm making a difference because I see it every day. And I don't need somebody there to tell me they love me to know that what I'm doing makes a difference. Because for me, having done it so long, I think that's one of the great advantages at this point in my career and my life, is that I know it works and I have complete belief and faith in it. A lot of newer guides don't have that because they haven't had that experience to see when somebody hates them. 10 weeks down the road, they're going to like be a completely different person. And when guides start to see that, it's really inspiring. And I hold on to some of those experiences I've had over the years when there were really hard teams, and I remember where they got to after those hard moments, because I've had teams literally try to mutiny and take over the team and like destroy the guides and get out. And, you know, those intense moments, when people go through those intense fires, that's when they grow more.
Mm.
And I often talk with guides about two types of fun. There's the type 1 fun and the type 2 fun. Type 1 is fun right now when you're doing it. Type 2 is often involved with a little bit of suffering and misery when you're doing it. Like you're going on a really, really hard hike and you want to stop and you want to stop and you want to stop, but you keep getting up even if you do stop and you keep going. Eventually you get to the end. Those are the ones that generally make the best stories later in life. They're the ones you feel the most excited and successful after completing. And they're the ones you remember. Things that are easy, people don't often remember. It's mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, that was another great day sitting watching a movie. Next day, you might not even remember what movie you watched. But you're never going to forget the first time you get a fire with sticks. You're never going to forget sleeping out on the ground or sitting by a fire all night and not sleeping and then getting up the next day and hiking. You're not going to forget cooking on a fire out in the wilderness and hearing the coyotes howling around you. All those things are truly special and unique because they take more to actually make them happen.
And you're not going to forget spending 10 to 12 weeks in a wilderness area.
Yep. Very few people in the world ever get to do that. And we have students that will take them on, we call them challenge hikes. So we'll hike 20 to 30 miles in 24 hours.
Wow.
And very few people ever do that except for like through hikers.
Right.
But for 16-year-old, I mean, that's amazing. And then they go out and they survive. And sometimes we do other ones where we take them out and we do a couple of days with them. We take less gear. And, you know, they got to learn how to stay warm by a fire all night instead of having a sleeping bag or make a coal bed to stay warm on. I've had students where I've taken them out and we get a piece of wood and we put coals in it, kind of like the old dugout canoes.
Uh-huh.
We burn in a bowl and we heat up rocks and we put rocks into the water in the bowl to cook dinner. So there's all kinds of cool things we can do when the students are in a spot that they can handle that and it'll help them. And we focus a lot on really individualizing the treatment we do with students. We have our basic program and pathway that they all do, but then each week they see therapists and we work on creating individualized plans to help support their specific growth. And we also work a lot with them on the family, because everything we do out there mirrors what happens in their family and with their friends and school and everything at home. So there's also a component where therapists work with their families at home, and the parents also have specific assignments they work on that mirrors the pathway that the students are working on, although it never goes to the same depth because they still have their lives going on.
Right.
And they're working, and they have distractions, other obligations, whereas the students are in it 24/7, which is a really amazing and powerful thing, because when their families show up, they can't believe how their children are behaving and acting and communicating. And it's really amazing to see that when the parents come, they've learned a lot of the same things we do, but their children are the ones leading the parents and the families through it. Like, no, let's stop. Let's do a coping skill right now. We're going into our old patterns. Like, you're 16 and you're teaching your parent how to communicate, and it's working. And it's really inspiring for the parents. It's also really empowering for the children, because what we talk about often is generational healing. We're not just helping them, we're healing families. And when we do that, those children grow up to have families that are healthier.
We are talking with Chris Mueller, a program mentor with Open Sky Wilderness Therapy, and you're listening to Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, and KPAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM and KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. I'm your host for today's show. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and we are talking with Chris Mueller of Open Sky Wilderness Therapy. It's been a fascinating conversation, Chris. I just have to say that. There are quite a few different theories on wilderness therapy. What are some of the different trains of thought and ideas, and how are they similar or how are they different?
Mm-hmm. What's interesting in while I'm getting my master's in social work, I've been doing a lot of research into wilderness therapy and why do they think it works. And there's really no definitive answer to why it works. And there's also not much even looking into how does this program succeed versus this program. There's a lot of similarities in almost all the programs out there. Some of the basics of we're out day to day eating healthier than most people eat in their normal life. Open Sky in particular, we do a lot of organic and local food. That was one of the focus points when we started, because instead of spam, we have like good local meat. Some of the basic communication things are pretty ubiquitous through all the programs. What we call an I feel statement, which is a way of owning what's going on for you and assertively expressing that. We work a lot with assertive communication, lots of physical movement, just day-to-day backpacking. And busting a fire with the Bodro Fire Kit is in every program I know about. So there's a lot of those basic components. And when it comes down to just living out in the wilderness with people, relationship is one of those things which they believe has a large impact. And they call it the therapeutic relationship, even though field guides aren't therapists. They're out there 24/7. Most programs, the therapist comes out and sees a student for one session a week for an hour, sometimes runs a group.
It's a huge difference.
Huge. So a lot of the focus is on how do you be in relationship. And having guides there who can develop and then express the awareness of what's going on for them and role model. Hey, I just made a mistake. I'm sorry. I was being really aggressive. Here's what was going on for me. When you're in relationship with someone and you have rapport and you like them, you want to be like them. So the more powerful the guides are in their own work, the more powerful of a role model they are. And the wilderness, as I mentioned before, is just like this amazing mirror. There's, in the realm of wilderness therapy, it's often talked about as consequences. So there's natural consequences. You don't put up a shelter and it rains, you get wet. Right, and we have to balance out the safety concerns with the growth opportunities. Mm. If somebody can get wet and be safe, it's an amazing, powerful experience because they're going to get mad and they might yell at me like, you didn't put a shelter up for me. You didn't do this. It's like, well, yeah, but it rained on you. Right, and you knew it was going to rain and you sat there in the rain. And then we have logical consequences, which, okay, so how do I help you understand the choices that you're making and how they impact you? So an example for that could be, well, if you're not learning and putting the effort in to learn how to make a fire, you're not going to have a fire that night, right? And it's kind of a natural but also logical because, again, it's a safety or not. If it's a safety concern, I'm going to make a fire for him. If it's not a safety concern, I'm going to let him sit there.
A teachable moment.
Yeah, be a little uncomfortable so they can learn that lesson. And then we have contrived, which often don't really make sense, and they take more of an explanation to be like, hey, here's why we're doing what we're doing. And sometimes they get it, sometimes it feels more like punishment. And when it comes back to it, the wilderness is the one where it's just natural. The wilderness cannot contrive anything. It is what it is, and there's no fighting it. Everybody looks and sees the same mountain from a different perspective. So we try to allow those things to come. And then in relationship, people are who they are too. So there's also natural consequences about being in relationship of, if I yell at you, I'm going to push you away and you're probably going to be upset with me and you might yell back at me. When you have an experience though with someone, you yell at them and they can, instead of yelling back at you, reflect and validate you. Like, wow, you are really pissed off at me right now. That must suck. Like, that's a completely different thing. And a person, when I watch people respond to me when I do things like that, they can literally be cursing me out. And I can just take in what they're saying and validate them. There's nothing left to fight against. Just like the wilderness. You climb a mountain and you give up, but you're giving up. You can't fight it. It's not going to fight back. If a person doesn't fight back, there's nothing to fight against. And they start to realize that, oh, this person who's sitting with me has been sitting with me for day after day after day actually must care. Because to stay out there, like, nobody can do what I do if they don't care. Because who's going to sit there and be hated day after day? And, you know, I've had these experiences where I bring in new guides and I'm sitting there. I'm like, do you really want to do this? Do you know what you're getting into? They're like, well, I want to be in the wilderness with people. Like, this isn't like Outward Bound where you go out and people want to be there. Like, we have people on watches because they want to kill themselves. And that means we have to have somebody with them, like, no further they can reach their hand. And we call it arm's reach. And I've had times when I'm sitting in the mud, in the snow, just watching somebody's legs because they're standing next to somebody who's on watch, who's taking their shower behind a tarp.
Wow.
And shower, I use loosely because it's a camp shower or sometimes just like bottles of water you dump over yourself.
Right.
For a half hour, I'm just sitting there in the mud, wet, cold. And it's like, why would I do this? It doesn't make sense intellectually to me and logically. And yet when I see the results and I feel the connection, like, it's amazing that all these little things add up to such huge success.
It's almost like we just described that story there. You said that the wilderness is a mirror. That it's there. It's not going to go anywhere. That mountain's always going to be there. Those trees are always going to be there. Well, typically, we'll still always be there. But it's almost like you are trying to be the same way when you're communicating with these students, with these kids. Like, mm-hmm. You're trying to be a mirror as well, a reflective mirror, just like the wilderness is to them as well. So it's like a double, mm-hmm. double impact in a way on them.
Exactly. And I try to help just accentuate and amplify what the wilderness is showing them so that they can really make sure and get that lesson. And they could see that the same thing with the wilderness is with people. Mm. And I truly believe that they already know the answers. And if they're upset and they're resistant, it's something that I'm doing that's inviting that resistance. So it's a lot of self-reflection for me of what can I do differently? How can I invite a different response from them instead of continuing to help them keep their old habits going? So helping them learn to break those. And that's what I've learned over the years that I could speed up is because I've developed a lot more awareness of, I know when I'm having a reaction, that's feeding and that's bringing out their patterns. So when I can stop, not only do they get to experience that, but they get to see the role model of, oh, I don't have to do what I've been doing. Because afterwards, they generally feel better and more connected.
I feel like I was also reading on your bio on the Open Sky Wilderness website that you feel like food is a really important component in the therapy as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Food is totally important. I mean, most of the people out in the U.S. right now eat pretty poorly. And, you know, even people who go to Whole Foods, one of the biggest sellers of Whole Foods is junk food. People think it's organic, so it must be healthy. Healthy exercise and food, like, life just changes. So I would definitely agree that it's a component that's really important for us.
And is it something that, like, the kids or the students will come together and make meals together? Like, is that another mm-hmm. element that they have to do as well? Is cooking a meal, like, and if you don't cook the meal together, you're not going to eat?
Well, generally, everybody has to work on making a fire. And then once we have a fire, usually every night there's chores, and a couple of students will make the group meal for that dinner. And then breakfast and lunch, they usually have their own food that they make or leftovers that they'll eat for those meals. So there's often a lot of pride of, hey, I'm cooking food for you all. Teach me how to do it because it's hard on a fire. And then they get really excited, and there's a lot of group culture out there about making a good meal. And then they find this recipe they love, and they want to keep making that. It becomes like their team recipe. And then somebody will bring something new in or try to create something. And it's fun because they can make a lot of really good food with very, very few supplies. And, like, you have a pot on a fire.
Basic.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it builds a little bit more community while you're doing these individualized tasks. Mm-hmm. But when you're cooking food together and you're sort of rotating through these chores, I guess, as you said, mm-hmm. then, it seems like all the students will get an opportunity to help cook food for everybody.
Yep.
And that builds that solid foundation of building that community within the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're caretaking for each other. And it's also really nice, too, that every dinner we do what's called knucking up.
So knucking up.
Knucking up. So we make fists and touch the fist of the person next to you. And that's somewhat of a hygiene thing, so we're not holding hands. It's also a little less religious for some people. And it's just like we do that and we express gratitude every night. And it's really sweet to hear so many students who, usually after those first couple of weeks of being there, they express how grateful they are for their family, how grateful they are for their family, that is their team out there, for the guides, for their therapists, for their friends at home, for their pets at home, like, for all kinds of things. And gratitude is really important in my life. And I've seen that help a lot of people when they can literally learn to be grateful for those challenging things like being sent to wilderness therapy. The whole experience changes for them because there's some acceptance that comes with gratitude. And when we express gratitude, then I can see in my life the blessings that come from the challenges. And that's what I see with the students as well.
We are talking with Chris Moeller, a program mentor with Open Sky Wilderness Therapy, and you're listening to Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU, 89.1 FM in Silver City, and KTAL LP, 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. We'll be right back after the short break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU, 89.1 FM, and KTAL LP, 101.5 FM. I'm your host for today's show. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and we've been talking with Chris Moeller of Open Sky Wilderness Therapy. Chris, so I know that you've been working on this type of work for 14 years. Can you tell us just a story? I'd just love to hear a story of any particular moment or any particular person or group of people that really sort of impacted you or that was just a great story to share, because you must have many, mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot of individual students and teams that it's hard to forget. Like, there's a special place in my heart for them. As I mentioned earlier, one of my focuses is to really get to know people and to listen and to really just reflect and validate what's going on for them. So I spend a lot of time listening and watching. And I had this one team about 6 years ago. And there were six adolescent girls. Five of them were getting close to moving into the north. And
that's stage three?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we were out in this beautiful area, and they looked up at this mountain, and they said, God, wouldn't it be great to camp out on top of a mountain one day? I was like, huh. So before we go to the north, there's usually a challenge for them, and that's usually an individual thing, but for this team, we had five out of the six who were really close to doing it. And I went to him that night, and I was like, you know, if you guys all want a challenge, you're going to have to trust me, but I'm going to make something happen. Like, do you guys want to do it? And for the sixth one who's not quite there, we'll count this for you, but you got to trust too. And they were all like, yes, we definitely trust you. Let's do it. It's like, great. So I got up the next morning early, and we had a bear hang. So I went to the bear hang, and I snuck out the dinner for the night. And told them, all right, we're going for a day hike. So they grabbed the basics. They had, their water bottles, their rain gear, and we took off on a day hike. And we climbed up onto a mountain, which for them was huge. It was like 3,500 feet up, and thankfully we found a spring up there. And all cross-country, no trails. So bushwhacking through the trees, climbing over trees. And they started to get nervous because they saw the sun starting to go down. And I found this alpine meadow. And we went out there and like spread them all out. I'm like, all right, everybody, you have your own camp. Dig your own fire pit. Get your firewood. You're all doing a fire vigil, which means they got to stay up all night tending their fire. And each one was a little bit different about why they were doing it, the intention they were putting into it. But it got down to 10 to 15 degrees that night.
That's cool.
And they had like a fleece jacket and a raincoat. And that was it. To stay warm was the fire. And I put my fire up at the head of the meadow so I could look down and keep an eye on them all night. And it was like whack-a-mole. I would see a fire die down. And a few minutes later, there'd be a big fire and they'd be up dancing around to try to warm back up because they'd fallen asleep by the fire all night long. And, that next morning got everybody back together. LNT, Leave No Trace, the whole camp area. And everybody was out of water and people were grumpy. And some of the things we do out there are yoga and meditation. And they were so upset and so pissed off and so worried and anxious about not having water and not being able to sleep the night before. I was like, great, let's do yoga med. They're like, what do you can't? We got to go. I'm like, nope, we're doing yoga med. And they just dropped into it. And every one of them just felt so much better after that. And then we were able to go and we were able to enjoy a 6 mile hike, again, cross country until we found water. And we got to this lake and all of a sudden there was this huge emotional breakdown. Like they finally had water, they knew they were safe. So their emotions just came and flooded out.
Yeah.
And then they started, they went from blaming to being really assertive and sharing. And then we hiked 10 more miles and they were just having fun. And we packed our camp up, hiked back to the van because it was our time to go back to base camp. And of course the radio was broken in the van. So I'm driving the van down this dirt road and they were at first sad again that there was no music. Because that's one of the things they look so much forward to. It's like, oh, music, I can hear the outside world. And these teenage girls just started singing Disney song after Disney song after for like an hour and a half. It was amazing. And I remember just looking in the rearview mirror and seeing them have so much fun. And just remember I had to pull over because tears filled my eyes. And seeing people with so little who had just come through something so hard, they were so happy. And it's really a beautiful thing to see people just be people and connect and have fun with nothing. And I saw one of those girls 4 years later.
I was just going to ask you that. Tell us.
And she remembered that. And she told me about how amazing that was for her. And I don't think any one of them could ever forget that.
Very empowering. Very empowering. Mm-hmm. Are there any family stories that you've sort of seen, like meeting, the effect that you have with these kids out in the wilderness? Obviously, is very profound. You've sort of talked a little bit about when the parents might come to a meeting and the kids will be telling them, "No, you need to stop and pay attention to this." Are there any big moment, family moments that you've kind of seen in your 14 years working on wilderness therapy?
I would say there's very few times I haven't seen a family come together that I wasn't completely touched by. When they see each other, when the parents show up to the wilderness, it's such an amazing thing to see family after family where before they came, they were fighting. They said they hated each other. They didn't want to see each other. They didn't want to be family anymore. Just run to each other and embrace and start crying.
Wow.
And that happens every time somebody graduates, just about. It's amazing.
Now, how long? So you said this program, usually a typical student will be in the program for 10 to 12 weeks. How long are you actually out there? Are you out there for the solid 10 to 12 weeks? Or what's it like for you and your work schedule, basically?
Well, I wish I was there the whole time. I've tried to make that happen, but haven't been able to yet. Most guides work for 8 days on, 6 days off. And a lot of times they'll go back to the same team over and over. So you'll see
that would make sense.
Half of the stay of a student. Because I live so far away, I generally work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I'm with the team for 15 days.
One thing I also wanted to ask you about, we've only got about 9 minutes left in the show, Chris. I hadn't heard of this before. It's called Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. Was this something that we talked about earlier in the program, or is this something different? What is Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs? Mm-hmm. Am I saying that correctly, too?
Yep, you sure are. It goes along really well with the medicine wheel that we use, and there's a lot of different models that mirror each other. Maslow's basically, I think of it as a pyramid. So on the base is the physiological needs. You have to take care of those physical things to keep people safe. And if you don't have physical safety, you can't do any emotional work. So then when we have the physical safety, then they can start to work on the emotional work. And eventually he called it self-actualization, which is, to me, is almost like those moments in my life when everything's just happening. I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, it's going well. I'm happy. I'm happy even when things that I'm going through are challenging because I feel at peace with who I am and what I'm doing. And we work on those as they go around the medicine wheel. It's a similar progression from the physical to the emotional all the way around. So it's just a way that helps students understand some of what they're going through and why we focus on what we focus on in the different stages.
I want to switch gears here just a little bit. Before we do, I want to give you an opportunity just to say anything else you'd like to say about Open Sky Wilderness Therapy. Is there a website? Is there more information if people want to learn more? Yeah, just, if you've got a couple of things you want to add, then I want to ask you maybe one or two more questions.
Yeah, I mean, Open Sky Wilderness Therapy is the website it's at. And if anybody wants to go on and take a look at it, there's an overwhelming amount of information on the website, including blogs that talk about everything from education, about what we do, to showing all the employees who work there. So it's a pretty exhaustive website.
And that's openskywilderness.com?
Open Sky Wilderness, yep.
Okay.
One thing I truly believe in with Open Sky is that we're a very holistic program. Like I said, we work on the medicine wheel, but that's the body, mind, heart, and soul too. And we spend a lot of time working on awareness. There's a lot of research to show that the awareness practices we do, the meditation, really helps to change people's brains and the way that they process things. And it's pretty empowerful to watch people who, like students who can't even sit still for a minute without talking, be able to sit and meditate and realize that their minds are not what they thought they were, and the world's not what they thought it was, but they can actually learn to experience things genuinely for what they are.
It's important work that you're doing, Chris. You know, thank you for doing it, because it's just great. It's really great stuff. Switching gears a little bit here, we mentioned the top of the program, the top of the hour, that you're working as an intern with GRIP, the Gila Resources Information Project here in Silver City, as a part of your schooling to get your master's in social work. What are some of the things that you're working on here with GRIP as an intern? Are you focusing on doing outreach around the Holloman F-16 proposal? Are you doing anything on wilderness or wild and scenic? Or tell us what some of the things that you're doing around town.
So some of the things I'm excited about right now is we're planning with another person with GRIP to lead a few hikes out in the wilderness to get people out to see some of the areas where they're looking to expand the wilderness and wild and scenic river acts. So we can get people out to really experience what the beauties are and the joys of being out there, so that hopefully they'll want to also participate and help protect those areas. Been doing a lot of community outreach with businesses to go out and help with the F-16, the training flights that might happen over the Gila in the area, to help educate people so they can understand more about what might happen and help them be informed so they can make choices about what do they want in their area.
Right. So like these hikes that you're talking about, do you have any dates set up yet, or is that sort of still in progress?
The other person is going to be putting out dates and everything for that. I just get to go out and have fun and show some people some of the beauty out here.
I also just kind of want to go back to what we were talking about, wilderness therapy. I have a question here that I forgot to ask you. Is this something that's available to families in Silver City or Las Cruces or, you know, New Mexico at large? Or is there a local similar group like Open Sky and Wilderness Therapy, or you guys are like, since you're in Durango, based out of Durango, would that be the closest place to go?
Yeah, there's not a wilderness therapy program in New Mexico. That's actually why I'm getting my MSW, is because I hope to open a program down here.
Ooh.
Using the Gila for the area.
Excellent.
And one of the drawbacks to wilderness therapy currently is that it's a very expensive treatment modality. And it doesn't have to be that way, but most of the programs have made it that way. So my hope is to be able to have a program down here that is actually accessible to people.
And affordable, yeah. Because like you said earlier, you said that it's the 1% of the population that's basically that can afford this, because it's quite pricey. How would you make it affordable for, you know, because there's a lot of need for people who don't have the money and the resources to pay for such an awesome, outstanding program. Do you have any thoughts on how you would make it affordable for the average person?
Well, in New Mexico, Medicaid will help to pay for that with any kind of drug and alcohol, either treatment or prevention. With that, the social worker has to be out there 24/7, because if a social worker's not there, you can't bill.
Right.
So that would be me being out there the whole time. Or finding somebody else who desires to do that. But generally, once people get a degree, they don't want to be out there. They want that hour a week and be on the phone and that from home to have more of a normal life. And then there's a lot of people in the industry who would love to see a program like this happen, but there's nowhere. So they want to work places like that. And it'd be a matter of trying to get in some of the most senior guides so they could take fewer people and resources to be able to make it happen without having the infrastructure that happens with most of the programs where they have a lot of administration, just keep all that really small and tight.
Well, when are you supposed to get and be wrapping up your master's degree here? How much time you got left?
I've got about 2 years before I finish all my practicums and everything.
Okay. Yep. So we won't have a wilderness therapy program in Silver City in 2 years' time, but maybe three, four.
Here's hoping.
Okay, well, I wish you the best of luck with all of that. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a fascinating, wonderful conversation. I hope our listeners have appreciated it just as much.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on, Nathan.
As always, many thanks to Kyle Johnson, our technical engineer and all-around radio guru here at KURU. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for your support, feedback, and dedication to our community radio. Please join us next week for another edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM, and KTAL LP at 101.5 in Las Cruces. This is what community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a lovely day, everyone.